Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. If you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. And if you get a chance, please check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
Hey.
And what's up? Hey. So I get that. Life is good and simple. And, we have some sunshine today in the North Woods. Not something I've been used to this past few months. So that's been really nice. And and let's see, what else? I made fettuccine Alfredo with meatballs, which isn't something I usually do, but it worked. Usually I tend to do like chicken or shrimp or even just like broccoli, but it worked with meatballs.
Sure.
Yeah. Something a bit different. And for me anyways, But anyways, so for tonight, we have a great lineup of poetry. We do have a few, I believe, yes, we have a few carryovers from, I think, a couple different shows at least. And then we will go into our main rites, our main topic, which is poetry inspired by the art of Bernard Buffet. And I'm not 100% sure I'm pronouncing that right. I meant to look it up, but I figure given the fact that he was born in France and his name is spelled Buffet, it's probably pronounced Buffet or somewhere similar. He definitely has some intriguing artwork. I would say, though, that if you have a fear of clowns, probably not for you unless you want to, say face your fears. Although he definitely didn't do clowns alone. Really just bright colors and intriguing style. If you don't know his artwork, I highly recommend checking it out. So with that being said, let's go ahead and get this ball rolling.
All right. We got Sick by Dan Allison. I'm sick to death of holding my breath. Corporations have overtaken this land. Another mass shooting at another school. Just great. More blood on our hands. No matter the claims, it's not senseless. The insane seek 5 minutes fame. We shout loudly about the reform, but don't give tabloids their blame. I don't want to read a manifesto. I don't care about perceived past abuse. These gunmen are equal parts evil and ill. But what is the press's lame excuse? Well, if you don't report it, competitors will. Is that swill you teach your own children to? Bow to peer pressure if the price is right. Deny any collateral damage you do. I'm talking to you, Fox News and CNN. No slander. We know the role you take. These drooling dogs of tabloids can't wait for another five-star Nielsen steak. I'm talking about you, NPR and ABC. Dear Disney, you suck too, so sue me. Your dealers fulfilling fentanyl scripts, killing clientele to make money on misery. Chicken shit, clickbait, mogul millionaires offer our youth to the highest bid winner. More livestock, chop chop to the auction block. We have to move those Happy Meal dinners. I'm talking about you, Mike, my pillow guy. Talking to you, Coca-Cola and Pepsi. Pimp American dreams to Hawks and Soda Streams. Isn't it enough to kill our kids off slowly? Because it's cultural to cancel celebrities, censor creators for their creepy opinions. But radio silence to creepy rap violence makes the best little villainous minion. I'm talking to my compass, dear reader. Talking about me, I take stock in the shame. But let's stop pretending we honor the victim by remembering the sick shooter's name and poem.
Great read there, Rex. You definitely had the right tone for this write. It had a definite rant feel to it. I thought it had powerful and hard-hitting lines. I like how he speaks up on school shootings, which are such a tragedy. It was a strong write on a difficult subject, and the idea that you can't blame just one specific person or organization. And I like how he opens it up. I'm sick to death of holding my breath. Corporations have overtaken this land. Another mass shooting at another school. Just great. More blood on our hands. And I like the lines, more blood on our hands. The R being, that this isn't, a finger pointed at one specific person or company. I really like the line because I felt like I had great inner and end rhyme with the chicken shit, clickbait, mogul millionaires offer our youth to the highest bid winner, more livestock, chop chop to the auction block. We have to move those Happy Meal dinners. And that end line in that stanza is a great nod to the idea of of what a gluttonous nation we've become. So just an excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Hey, you know what? When you shut down all the places, the institutions, where you put people to get help, where do they end up? They end up on the outside. And that's where they grow. Get a little bit more creativity under their belt, and then go out and have themselves a bang-up time. The funny part is, they're all made victims. And the real victims, the kids, the teachers, they kind of push to the side as not essential. Oh, another six died today. Three kids, three teachers. Oh, well, the victim had a hard life. The shooter.
Yeah, it's a sad state of our world, for sure.
Glorify the imbeciles. They don't need to be names. You know what? I'd just as soon take their bodies out back, have them roasted, toasted, and have their ashes thrown into the wind, certainly blown across the world where they do not belong.
Exactly, exactly. It's just a sad way of thinking. So, but great comment there, Rex. Very insightful. And all right, what do we got next?
Stand in the Fire by Eski.
All right. Standing in the fire to crucify liars, crushing desire to aspire to higher, to mend all the damages done, running to escape humanity, preserve what is left of his sanity, replacing confusion with clarity, through squinted eyes to ultimately rise from all that he'd come to despise, but the weight of the air was pinning him there, pressure that no man survives, counting the cost of paradise lost, feeding on crumbs that remain, the holocaust that melted his brain, the scourge and the whip, the fall and the slip, redundant, scattered refrains that fell off the page at the coming of age and washed away in the rain. To discover the seed of the dominant creed, then grind it up into dust, cast it to the wind for us that have sinned, accepting we do what we must. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, Stand in the Fire kind of hits on the notion of a trial by fire, because in that last stanza, cast it to wind for us that have sinned, accepting we do what we must. Sometimes the easiest thing ends up being the crucible that boils over. And sometimes the difficult thing, the one we harbor on and mull over, is the one that must be done, even though that decision weighs heavy. So the idea of standing in the fire is that notion of, you know what? You either stand in the fire and deliver yourself past that which you know needs to be done, or you stand in the fire and burn, and everything goes down with it.
I like that thought, the idea of the trial of fire and how everything goes down with it. This was the bronze winner in the contest for MO being the prompt. I like the three-line rhyming. I don't know why, but that's always really appealed to me. It has a nice polished look to it. Great use of imagery and inner and end rhyme. To me, I felt like it was a powerful and heartfelt write on how there is evil and darkness throughout history, and how oftentimes this can weigh heavily on the spirit of an individual man, but also on the spirit of humanity in general. I like counting the cost of paradise lost, feeding on crumbs that remain. the Holocaust that melted his brain, the scourge and the whip, the fall and the slip, redundant, scattered, reframed. It also kind of feels like the idea of an individual sinking into madness. With the idea of the line, pressure that no man survives, the idea of society's pressures that just lead to that moment of insanity. So amazing write by Eski, and very well done. All right, and what do we got next, Rex?
My hate drowned you, but true love never dies. By Roger Spatnerin. I dread this time of year when the nightmares begin. They're a constant reminder that our anniversary soon approaches. Those eerily damp, icy touches of death are the creepy chills of a cold sweat I wake up from those daily nightmares, the reminders of our anniversary. I wake up screaming, looking around my bedroom in total darkness, and beg for forgiveness from either one, above or below. Those dreams, those damned nightmares are real. I could still hear his muffled, desperate moans through the duct tape around his mouth, placed there not so much to hear his pleads for me to spare his life, but so that I wouldn't have to hear his wild claims and lies. The tide is rising faster, and the water is up to his chest. I picked a good spot, because when the tide recedes, it would dislodge his body and carry it out to sea. He's struggling now, as the water is up to his neck, and I'm sitting back on a beach chair, sipping some bubbly, listening to Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata with an evening at the shore under the moonlight of a full moon. How appropriate it was, that desolate part of the beach lit up very well, as I expected it would. This moment, the day, the weather, and location were years in the planning, because I wanted and needed to see him die. He's thrashing more violently, and I could actually hear the bones in his neck cracking as he desperately tried to angle his mouth on his shoulder to get the duct tape off. Then somehow it came loose enough before the surge of water was completely cover and drown him. As wet as it was, I could actually see his tears. They were unlike any tears I'd ever seen before. I guess it was from a combination of terror, panic, fear, anger, regret, sorrow, and or shame. You name it. Before it was over, I heard him scream, "Just please read the letter," garbled something, and it was over. I finished my glass of champagne as I just finished off my revenge, sipping it slowly and savoring the moment. It was bittersweet revenge of having taken a life from the blood of my blood. But I couldn't live with myself not exacting family justice. After I got off my jet ski, used to drag the area and make sure his body was gone, I went home. I was content with myself. I didn't care that he was my uncle. He deserved to die. But his words were haunting me weeks later. Every time I looked at the dresser drawer containing the letter, I was tempted to read it. That day, shortly before I subdued, rendered him unconscious, and buried him waist deep in the sand at the shore, I found the letter in his coat pocket addressed to me. It said, "Son, please read." However, the handwriting was that of my mother's. Those nightmares, those goddamn nightmares, started again. And that did it. I finally decided to open and read the letter, which said, "Dearest son, if you are reading this, I hope it's not too late. I should have told you sooner. However, we both agreed it was for your not to let you know what happened. Your father used his power and position to give us an unimaginable life, but it had its drawbacks, and you saw how he would become at times. The only person who could have protected us from the man that powerful was his brother, your uncle, the Goblin. But it came down to where it finally had to be done, and the family agreed that he had to sleep with the fishes, and it was your uncle who got the order to do it. So I beg you, son, please don't exact revenge on your uncle for killing your father by doing the same thing to a made man. I should have told you this so much sooner, but I was ashamed of myself for the affair I had with your father's brother, and would hate myself even more if you lost respect for, and worse, stopped loving me. My dear son, you can't kill your uncle because he's your biological father. Those deathly cold hands keep waking me from sleep as a reminder that tonight's the night we have an anniversary to keep. You know how much I love poetry? So pen those four lines and give it to me at the beach where we both had a chance to live. With tears in my eyes and his deathly ice-cold hand now lovingly warming my heart from the hurt and pain I can't bear to live with anymore, I write, Dear Dad, I forgave Mother for her lies. My hate drowned you, but true love never dies. End poem.
Wow, great read there, Rex. That was quite the long and epic write, and you definitely lended the right tone of voice to the reading. I liked this as a powerful, dark write told from a first-person narrative. I like that, you know, it's a horror or, you know, a dark tale, but it's a dark tale with a lesson, you know. And you know, I like how it speaks on the idea of how even, like, white lies, even lies that you think that being are for the good can lead to something dark. It was definitely an epic and haunting tale on the idea of lies that lead to murder and to destruction of the soul. You know, it's psychologically haunting, bringing us into the mind of someone who thinks they're saving their family. Like, I get the impression that the main character feels like it's their job to protect their family's integrity. And there's this idea of how oftentimes characters in books and movies will, you know, be doing something, you know, like that is morally wrong, but feel like it's justified. I really like the attention to detail with the imagery. He's thrashing more violently, and I could actually hear the bones in his neck cracking as he desperately tried to angle his mouth on his shoulder. And then you feel the weight of the main character's guilt as you come to the end and the realization of what was truly going on. So just an amazing write and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Psychological thriller, yeah. It kind of, that's something that could have been written for The Sopranos and worked well into the storyline or the story arc through its run on HBO. The bite, all the angles of it hold some truthful notes. The idea that he just killed the made man who was his father, yet he knows the repercussions and the pitfalls that walk that line, and also understood the fact that the man he thought was his father was killed because of something, and that came down from the top also. So there's a whole lot of bend in this story that kind of hits on the idea of, you took unto yourself that which you know is punishable because being on the made angle means you can't touch. And the haunting angle of the anniversary kind of hits on that note. Who knows, there'll be a time when it's his turn. So the final note at the back end of being delivering himself into the stir, like as far as almost a an understanding note that yeah, this better is best if it comes from me as opposed to someone else. But
I like
it also
that.
Goes
great observation.
That note in the family of hiding things way too long, because some things you don't hide that long.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I like the comparison that you made to The Sopranos. I have to admit, I've never watched that show. I'm sure at some point I'll be busy watching it on Netflix or something, but for now it's one I've never seen. But I know enough about it that I think that was a really cool comparison. So, all right, and what do we got next, Rex?
The Grim Tale of Goldilocks.
All right.
Well, by Benny Hinn. Sorry.
The Grim Tale of Goldilocks by Jenny Hunt, 2017. Intruder alert, alarm the sirens, girl breaks in, or should the headline read, oh no, girl gone missing, eaten by three bears. It's all about perspective anymore, it seems. Some say she got lost and needed shelter. Others claim she was on a crime spree. Whatever you believe, speculation is just that. Rumors spread like wildfires. The more they spread, the more damage they cause. Fact is fact. Time to review the evidence. Eaten bowls of porridge, broken furniture, asleep in their bed, and chased away, disappeared, nowhere to be found. What's left of the three bears? No one ever asked. Chased her into the woods, they did, now home with blood dripping from their lips. How do I know, you ask? I'm the investigator in this bizarre case. See, forgetting to clean up was their mistake, a big downfall from innocent to guilty. Three wild bears were invaded, not knowing the law, a plan they concocted, didn't realize that I'm one smart detective. Now in custody, they are here with me, regretting ever going on that walk in the first place. End poem. Oh, yes, and I'm reading comments, Joy. All right. Moment of silence there. And your thoughts, Rex?
Oh, I think it's funny. Reminds me of Ranger Smith from Yogi Bear and Boo Boo. It's a picnic of baskets, except with the air with the three bears and Goldilocks. I like the cartoon analogy thought with, hey, don't worry, the bear's fault. Yeah, I like me picnic baskets. But she invaded our home. Hey, you know what? We didn't do nothing. We didn't do nothing, Copper. She left on her own accord.
Right. I like that. I like that. Great comment. I enjoyed this. There was a dark, twisted look at the story of Goldilocks and the three bears. I thought it was really cool how she told it from the voice of like a 1930s, 1940s detective, you know, like as you were saying in your comment, you know, I didn't do it, Copper. You know, you get that whole vibe. And so I thought that was really cool. Great takeoff of the MO prompt. I like that this showed a little bit of perspective from, like, if you could imagine that if Goldilocks and the three bears were put on trial, that you'd have people saying, you know, the bears are guilty, they shouldn't have, you know, chased her, they shouldn't have killed her. The others saying, well, she invaded their privacy. You know, and I like that this is definitely a fun and creative write. But it does have a great lesson about society, especially in the line, rumors spread like wildfires. The more they spread, the more damage they cause. And that is so true about rumors, you know, so excellent right and very well done. All right, what do we got next, Rex?
Not the Muse by Northern Powerhouse. He scuttled in to watch the dance.
Rex?
Punched over. What?
Rex.
What?
I'm sorry if I didn't change it, but we have a recording for this one.
Oh, okay. Even better.
All right. All right, here we go.
Not a Muse. He scuttled in to watch me dance, hunched over and depressing. Each toe I'd point, he would anoint me with his curious blessing. A silence so unnatural, as I arched a curving coil, his eyes entranced, his fingers danced to capture me in oil. And is that me? I asked his face, with rich poetic glaze, whose graceful roll would melt the soul of all who stopped to gaze. And where's the sweat of laboured chore? Where's the pain and strife? The pretty shape my tutu makes does not define my life. He rearranged my limbs a while, my elegance redrawn. As fingers teemed, it almost seemed that I would be reborn. A palette knife upon my cheek was scraped across my blush. The truth he chased was drowned in paste he lavished on the brush. He asked some other miscreants to lend their admiration. They spoke at will about his skill and of my reputation. Now I can never be returned to my unpainted form, and now there's winks and offered drinks each time that I perform. That art became the weight I bore, the axe with which they felled me, and I was gone as light shone on the pedestal that held me.
Wonderful, wonderful read and write there, Northern Powerhouse. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to read your poetry or hear your poetry in your voice. I gave this one a gold in the MO contest because I thought it was a creative take on the prompt. It had great rhyme and flow. I really liked how it spoke on the idea of a dancer's reputation changed by the uncaring actions of the artist who captured her. You can really see the interaction between the relationship. It actually, I'm so bad at remembering names, but there was this contest I did for a Twisted Tuesday show about this a woman sculptor who had an affair with a well-known sculptor that it basically, ruined her reputation and sent her into the madhouse. And I like that this is a classic story on the idea of someone who's lured in by charm, lured in by the idea of being captured, immortalized in paint, and then their definition of themselves changes in society. I really like, and is that me? I asked his face with rich poetic glaze, whose graceful roll would melt the soul of all who stopped to gaze. Where's the sweat of labor chore? Where's the pain and strife? The pretty shape my tutu makes does not define my life. I like how that speaks on the definition of self. And also great end lines. The art became the weight I bore, the ash with which they felled me, and I was gone as light shone on the pedestal that held me. And I like how the other things that this speaks on especially comes through in the end lines. Is that idea of a reputation of someone on a social and cultural level, as a performer. And then, how we oftentimes put famous people on pedestals only to at some point having become knocked off of there. So amazing, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
All right, not amused. I can hit that with the title, but it's also a kind of a drawback to itself because of the voice he offered up. She is the muse, and she's trying to deny her essence as a prima ballerina, and that's not who and what she is. But the problem with that is it's exactly who and what that she is. So the depiction, there is no pain or strife in that because you're not doing the thought of a picture when it comes to practice, trying to learn this particular role versus the next one. This is during a performance, so you're capturing the essence within that performance and the thought of you got that person in the dark looking from the background, yes, but you've also got a host of other faces within that picture too. You got the blue one, which is offering up two large eyes looking down, the yellow one on the side there, plus a little bit more in between. So the thought of, She wanted to be that prima ballerina, so she can't deny who and what she is, even though she's trying to deny that. And her thought of being about the pedestal, it's all about the pedestal when you're that prima ballerina. It's who and what she wants, what she's worked her whole life for, and what she is embodied as. And if nobody takes anything else from that because she has nothing else to offer up past her dancing, that's her own fault. So she can't deny who and what she is and what she's become simply because someone has captured her in the perfect essence of who and what she is in that moment.
I like that. I like that. The idea of trying to reach that goal, that nearly unattainable goal, and trying to form yourself into that, as the character forming herself into that prima ballerina. So, very cool. All right. And what do we have next?
Great Plains of Arcadia by Poetic Creation. Streaming is my herd through pasture over meadow, like the blue stream that divides his green and mine. Beneath this tempestus, scorching golden beams of light that raise apple boughs, green and red of ripe sweet fruit. Tease my neighbor horse so that this horseshoe's thunder as he gallops past sheep his unseen gold wings flapping. Carry him over the moon, somewhere beyond Saturn's rings, where he meets the stars in a black sea rich with loneliness. A shepherd's calendar is written with the blaze of green, scorching, wounding beneath his rugged flesh of mind. Calloused hands hold a chestnut wood shepherd's crook, used to tend the flock while winds whistle through metal. Below white and blue, I whistle melodies to the mountains, throating up, thrusting upwards, creaking and remaining in tempestus. Thunderstorms watering fields full of golden wheat, tempting skies to gladly cut the same way that time spoils us all. Mocking ripe apples that have fallen to bride a feast for writhing worms that help to keep soil black and rich. Fertile like young ladies dancing in the sun and in the rain from morning to night, smiles flow like silk dresses flowing, like the tears of a man flowing having never seen country, who only knows stone bricks and timbers cut too perfectly.
All right, great read there, Rex. Wonderful write by PC. This was a carryover from Twisted Tuesday's show, Pastoral Poetry and Art. I like the title, The Great Plains of Arcadia. Arcadia being the idea of the heavenly realm, that perfection, that nirvana type, place that you go to, that utopia. That's it. That's what I was thinking of, a sense of utopia. Great imagery, great rhyme and flow. I like how this has a very pastoral feel in that it brings in, you know, the horse, the shepherds. Oftentimes, one of the most important elements of pastoral poetry throughout history since its invention was that it oftentimes, and not always, but oftentimes, covered the life of a shepherd, a sheep herder, or a cattle herder, you know, and spoke from their point of view and spoke on their life. And so I particularly like a shepherd's calendar is written with the blaze of green, scorching, wounding beneath the rugged flesh of this rugged flesh of mine. Calloused hands hold a chestnut wood shepherd's crook used to tend the flocks while winds whistle through meadows. And I like how much that speaks on the idea of the hard work of the sheep herders and how they depended so much on the passing of the season, you know, had to pay attention to the passing of the season in order to have an idea of how life was going to go for them with the next one. And I also like fertile like young ladies dancing in the sun and the rain from morning to night, smiles flow like silk dresses flowing, like the tears of a man flowing, having never seen country, who only knows stone, bricks, and timbers cut to perfection. I like that end line because it does, to me, speak on the thought of how there's so much to see out there in the world and how unfortunate it is that so many people don't get to see and appreciate the beauty of the countryside on a one-on-one experience, rather than through just pictures. So amazing write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, yes, Arcadia does refer to that sort of pastoral beauty and where everything in nature is the perfect angle of things. And he hits on that a lot with this. And even at one point in time, Canada was the reference point of Arcadia, going back 300-400 years, because of the amount of pristine woodlands and the beauty seen for the first time. It was referred to as Arcadia, and then Acadia at some point after that. This kind of hits on that picture, that pastoral note that actually everybody looks at and sees you see the shepherd, you see horses, you see the beauty of the trees, the grass, and that note, because he hits in that first thing, streaming is my herd through pasture over meadow, like the blue stream that divides his green and mine. That note of a stream, the dividing point between two plots of land, kind of the neighbor thing, where he's got one side, you got the other side, and you both share the water that flows through both properties. So it is a nice angle, and it is a note that most people do not ever get to see, that kind of beauty, like going up to the mountains and seeing pristine summits, seeing wildlife, because you hit on that note on the bottom end with the thought of brick buildings and perfectly cut wood beams without actually notating that, you know what, you might know what wood is, but if you don't actually, I've never gotten out of the city into the woods, the mountains or the valleys or anything else, you don't know what pristine beauty is or what real wood looks like as a tree that's like a redwood, 500-600 feet tall.
Absolutely. That is so true. Really great observations there. And yes, this poem was definitely a great capture of that that pastoral type painting. So Very cool. And what do we got next, Rex?
Her Fight by Maliha.
On the cold, wintry night, pen writes something of might. Words flourish the mind. She fights and fights. Candles have to glow. They have to glow. Thoughts have to flow. Time has to go. Though near the ocean, memories flow in a portion. Hope in her eyes sings very nice. Music near the beach, pain in her speech. Forget the past, enjoy the present. Beauty is the mystery in the mind, in the history. Troubles in her life, worries are rife. No happiness nor smiles. Joy and love are way miles. She cannot bear it anymore. She loves to adorn. End poem. And what a beautiful write by Maliha. I'm glad she was inspired to share something with us. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, her fight. There's kind of an implication in that. She's fighting the urge to write while writing. Or fighting the thought that the muse isn't working, or fighting the thought of depression because there isn't anything there except herself, a candle, a pen, paper, and a mind that is wandering between avenues of sadness, the thoughts to beauty, and the fact that there is a problem. Forget the past, enjoy the present. So the her fight is kind of the idea of stabilizing oneself to actually enjoy instead of kind of pining on the cold winter night, but noting the music near the beach, the music of the water, the sun.
Really great observation there. I thought this was beautiful. First of all, I like that she centered her poem and put the lines together. It almost then makes it look like, you know, a lantern or a candlestick. You know, like there's a certain sense of beauty to the shaping of the poem. You know, I thought this was a wonderful write with great imagery and metaphors, and really a heartfelt write that spoke to me on the idea of a young woman who seeks to give and receive love and joy in life. But the life is so filled with these memories of pain that she struggles to do that. You know, I really liked the lines all the way through, but especially hope in her eyes, sings very nice, music near the beach, pain in her speech, you know, forget the past, enjoy the present. Great words of wisdom there. Forget the past, enjoy the present. But sometimes that's just so difficult to do, especially with, you know, troubles that just weigh heavy on the spirit. And when it feels like that love and that joy that you desire is so out of reach. So excellent write by Maliha, sorry, and I look forward to reading more of her poetry. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
On Earth by Poetic Prince R.W. Wind breezes are rustling up leaves. Earth and grass caress your feet. Waves are like coffee, foams in a huge mug. Your hands submerged and wet, swimming in an ocean lagoon riverbed. Look up to see tall snowy hill like iceberg peak kid tips, valley filled with a myriad of animals in natural nest. Flowers are flush and blush in their seasonal best. All creatures are at peace and nature is at rest. Visualize paradise and enjoy it there. End poem.
Great read, Rex. What a wonderful spiritual write with beautiful imagery. A great look at the idea of paradise on earth, where there's this sense of peace and this sense of balance. I really like the imagery of your hands submerged and wet, swimming in an ocean, lagoon, riverbed, and then flowers are flush and blush in their seasonal best. All creatures are at peace and nature is at rest. Visualize paradise and enjoy it there. I thought visualize paradise and enjoy it there was a great ending line, giving a nod to the idea of finding paradise within our own minds. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Yep, this is kind of a meditation piece. Kind of centers you in the moment. You can visualize that paradise right in the moment when you're at a moment of stress or strife. Then you can actually balance yourself again in the moment and bring peace over yourself. So I kind of look at it that way.
I like that. I like that. And yeah, I can definitely see that. It does have that very meditative feel to it. So great comment. All right. And what do we have next?
Clowning Juggalos in What Was Almost Solitude by Jenny Hunt. And you got a SoundCloud.
Yes, we do. And we have now gone into our Bernard Buffet-inspired rites. And let me find Jenny's SoundCloud. Here we go.
Clowning Juggalos in What Was Almost Solitude. Blueberry moonlit ala mode clouds up high, shooting across the roasting summer skies, sailing away to a land of cotton candy seas and mint shamrock glistening grasses of green. Tucked away behind the swaying trees, safely I arrive in the crisp, clean country. Nearby, a barn house is where the sea takes me. I find a secluded lake to skinny dip in freely, swimming leisurely until a scent grabs my nose. The smell of fried eggs and sausage, I suppose. I grab my things eagerly, but hesitant to run inside. He's sharp around the edges with piercing eyes. A clownish gesture of a man stood stoically. Spotted him making breakfast heroically. Famished after a long travel and swim, I knock, letting me sit. Doing what to do next, we talk. Letting me partake in his morning meal, more guests arrive. I don't know how to feel. Realizing I'm still in the nude, I try to get dressed. With his hand on my shoulder, he says, "Don't stress." Suddenly, through the bedroom door, four half-nude muses crawl clumsily on his floor. Panicking now, I stand up to leave, but the woman mischievously convincingly speak. "Stay with us a while. We won't bite," they insist. "This is a fun house. Come be our new juggalo sis." Should I stay, I ponder, having nowhere else to go. I'll play along for now until it's too out of control. End poem.
Great read and write, Jenny. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, I'd say she had a bit of fun. There's light humor in this, the thought of obviously going skinny dipping in the little pond there, or lake, whatever it was, kind of hit the right moment in there until she smelled something that's cooking. And all of a sudden, the fun house idea comes in, and she realizes she's stark raving naked, hasn't gotten dressed, even after she picked all of her stuff up anyway. I guess the aroma of bacon, eggs, and sausage kind of made her drool in the moment, and she forgot to dress. So that thought of playing along until it gets that little out of control kind of hints at the, well, you know what, this ain't so bad. I'll hang out and have a bit of fun. After all, I did come in the door naked to begin with, so my fault. Or maybe the intention is on that note of kind of like that when you're going to make a speech and you wake up in a dream and you're naked and everybody knows it. And it's kind of like a little bit of a self-awareness in the moment. And with the self-awareness, it's here. Yeah, I'm here. I'm down for it.
I like that. Yeah, I can definitely see it. Yep, and I like the use of the word juggalo, which I had to look up, which is apparently a person who's a fan of the rap duo Insane Clown Posse and is a person who basically, like, is up for anything, as you were mentioning, you know, lives in the moment, you know, just has crazy fun with life. And I can definitely...
That kind of hits the right end of that. I said, since you already know what a juggalo is, well, you know what's in there and you know what's coming. Yeah, there's no argument there about control.
very true. Yeah, but I like this. I like that the imagery she brings in, especially in the first stanza, blueberry moonlit a la mold, clouds up high, shooting across the roasting summer sky, you know, and we find, you know, ourselves with a character that, and this is great storytelling. You know, Jenny definitely has a gift for storytelling. I find a secluded lake to skinny dip in freely, swimming leisurely until a scent grabs my nose, the smell of fried eggs and sausage, I suppose, you know, and, you know, I like that it has that laid-back vibe, that idea of, you know, one moment just, you know, relaxing, and then the next you find yourself somewhere, you know, where everybody's just laid back and having fun. I do like where there's this change, this twist of emotions, of reactions with the character. Suddenly, through the bedroom door, four half-nude muses crawl clumsily on his floor. Panicking now, I stand up to leave, but the women mischievously, convincingly speak. There was, in that moment, to me, when I was first listening to this poem, that had a Hotel California-type vibe, and I thought it was, you know, it kind of had a humorous and yet dark undertone at the same time, especially within those lines with the panicking and the mischievously convincingly speak. And then, you know, at the end, yeah, great use of this is a fun house, come be our new juggalo sis. And then at the end, there's a kind of a darkness too. I'll play along for now until it's too out of control. And it's that acknowledgement that, yeah, it's great to have fun. It's great to live in the moment and just be yourself, do whatever you want. But sometimes that do whatever you want idea does get out of control, and it does lead to people being hurt. So very cool, right? Very well done. All right. What do we got next, Rex?
Blind to Self by J.K.E. Mack. Your read.
Oh, okay. You are right. I was all prepared to listen to your voice, but I guess I'll be listening to my own. All right. The stage shrinks in sheer disillusionment. Eyes drop below base. They crawl towards a sunken face. Strings hold on for dear life as a bow swishes to and fro. Notes pierce like a carving knife. Frost rests on shoulders that night. Bars fall flat. Treble clefs tremble in terror. Hiked breathe wonders whether this will ever get better. Applause sings and roars. Fingers bang, beats bashfully, but all stage ears hear tomatoes. They splotch where roses ought to go. Shrink this love letter, violin tucks away for later. Bludgeon it bloody blue. Peak art will then translate through. and poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, kind of too. The blind itself, you know, kind of hints, and the language kind of hints at a solo violinist who thinks they've played a shit show, and the idea of all stage ears, here's tomatoes, they splotch where roses ought to go. Kind of that also hits on the note of notes falling flat. A peacock will then translate through, but it's also because she hits on the idea of rats. Fingers bang beats bashfully. That kind of hits at the note of the conductor as well. So maybe it's a note to both the blind itself, the conductor leading, but also the violinist, and both are hearing something a little bit different in the moment, and their translation of what's supposed to be happening isn't working in either one of their ears, and that translation offers up sour notes to both.
I like that. I think that was great observation. Yeah, the prompt she wrote to was actually of a sad-faced clown standing on stage by themselves with a violin. And I thought this was a great take on the prompt because I felt like you could definitely tell which prompt it was written to. At the same time, she took it on a metaphorical level with the idea of, as you were mentioning, there's this real idea of self-hatred, of how we're our own worst critics, and strong, visceral imagery, especially with strings hold on for dear life as a bow swishes to and fro, notes pierce like a carving knife, frost rests on shoulders that night. There's a real sense of, this feeling weighed down by the pressure to perform. And then the ending stanzas with the applause sings and roars, fingers bang, beats bashfully, but all stage ears hear tomatoes, they splotch where roses ought to go. And you get that feeling of the audience appreciating the music and the audience. And it's a great representation metaphorically of other people appreciating the gifts you offer up in yourself, but being that idea of how hard we can be on ourselves when it comes to self-love. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
Send in the Clowns by Dammit Dave. The birthday party started, and his family's gathered round. Some friends have joined the merry fray. The birthday boy is crowned. As laughter fills the jaunty air, his mother starts to fret. Where are the clowns I hired for this? Why have they not shown yet? Her son says, please don't worry, Mom, if they do not appear. Don't fret about those other clowns. There's some already here. She looks around the festive crowd, most drunken libertine, agreeing it's the biggest bunch of clowns she's ever seen. The party almost done. The doorbell rings and there's the crew. The clowns she hired had got lost as they were snuggled too.
Wonderful read there, Rex, and great write by Dammit Dave. As always, glad to see that he was inspired. Wonderful, wonderful rhyme and flow. I really like the humor in this. I like that it's literally about clowns, but it's also about, obviously what it's like to get together with family and friends for birthday parties or any kind of holiday, and how it can just be this kind of madness. This one definitely made me laugh and smile. Great use of the word libertine. She looks around the festive crowd, most drunken libertine, agreeing it's the biggest bunch of clowns she's ever seen. And, of course, leading up to that is great because it's like the idea of, you know, you can see this poor mother looking around trying to find the clowns, and all along they're there in the form of her family getting drunk. Her son says, please don't worry, Mom. If they do not appear, don't fret about those other clowns. There's some already here. So very creative, right? Smile-inducing, fun, and a great look at the idea of how absolutely silly and sozzled some people can get during parties. So very cool. And your thoughts, Rex?
Oh, it's not just about the family that gathered around, because they brought along some friends. You bring along some friends, they bring along some other goodies. And you know what? Hey, you know what? When the entertainment's late, the entertainers and within the crowd make their own entertainment. And that's usually getting slapstick drunk and having a party of the whole thing. Hey, it's not about the birthday boy, and it's not about the clowns, although they do end up coming anyway, and they're just as drunk as the rest of the crowd. So who's not up for a good clown now?
Absolutely, absolutely. Makes me think of some of my family get-togethers. There definitely is an excess of the clowns and of drinking, that's for sure. But very cool comment. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
Life's Cabernet Cabaret by Eric Svensson.
All right. Let me find that, and here we go.
Life's Cabernet Cabaret, Mesdames et Messieurs, la vie est un cabaret. Little sparrows, we can, nightly knaves, baritone, glamour emulated by Madame's smoky voice. Life's Cabernet Cabaret. Don't let sweet grapes become dry red wine, rye with tannins. Speak easy in Narcissus Music Hall for a spell. Little sparrows with delectable bone marrow. We eat as Piaf with no regrets about tomorrow. Swap dreary abstinence for delightful abstinence. Mesdames et messieurs, la vie est un cabaret. Au natural, au fresco, titbits, titillate, sheer delight of Epicurean morsels pandered. Feast on racy, acy, continental smorgasbord. Birds of a paradise flock together. Flurry, hurry, scurry of fine pink ostrich feathers. Mesmerized messieurs smile at Madame's smoky voice modulation. Flurry forward, we pack up our travels in our old kit bags and smile, 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 while we velucifer to light our fag. We stylish boys and girls smile. What's the use of worrying? It never was worthwhile. Inner Narcisse, alter ego, sparrow adroit. We know love's cosmic eye is also always on us. Chin chin, bottoms up, old chap, end poem.
Wonderful read and write, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Oh, man, this is such a clever write, and it really, really made me smile. But first, your thoughts, Rex.
I had a bit of fun with this and some double dipping and double entendres with, let me see, Al Natural, Al Fresco, Titbits, Titillate. That was just one. Then he rolled in a flurry, hurry, scurry of fine pink ostrich feathers. Another, and I like this one. While we a Lucifer to light our fag. And Chin Chin, bottoms up, old chap. It loads it up with double entendre thoughts. A humorous note. He's playing off that the cabaret, La Cage aux Folles. And it reminds me of the Birdcage with Robin Williams and all the time and trouble he had playing around the idea of running a gay cabaret nightclub and trying to act straight for the kids' nuptials to be coming up because they didn't know he was of that persuasion.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. He definitely had fun with this. Definitely had fun with this. Great imagery throughout. I like how he's really captured the vibe of the cabaret and that atmosphere, that life. So many great references and clever references from the very beginning. Little sparrows, we can. Like, I like that he says, you know, can being the can dance, but also, you know, the idea of being enthusiastic. And even at the end, he brings in another, dance, Chin Chin. I always like the use of the word smorgasbord. A natural, you brought up this dance, and it was a great way, it was a great fun way to bring up that idea of how much there is to offer up as far as delights of the flesh go. I also like the nod to the singer Edith Piaf. I thought that was very cool. Little sparrows with delectable bone marrow, we eat it, pull off with no regret about tomorrow. Swap dreary abstinence for delightful absinthe. It definitely speaks on that life that's just lived in like grand gesture. You know, it's in the moment, being caught up in the music and the dance and the treats of the flesh and just enjoying all that rather than, you know, living a life that is down. So excellent, fun write, and very well done. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
Life in Limbo by Errant Penta.
All right. And we do have a SoundCloud for that, so go.
Empty Streets, Life in Limbo, by Errant Panther. I walk these empty streets, stripping away the mental notes, the clouded perspective. This city was built and thrives upon emotional engagement and interaction, but now I hear it bleeding. Its beating heart merely existing on the echoes of previous grandeur. The clatter of life locked away in private homes or involuntary quarantine for the sake of yet another test of humanity's viral tolerance. Yes, the streets are clean, the birds still fly, and the air is clearer than before, but our livelihoods surely value much more than that. What a price we paid to save whatever existence we could. We can't even look at a china plate without reliving the pain of the time we miss spending with those who matter so dear. End poem.
Great read and write there, Arendt. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And this is a beautiful and haunting write. I always love to see how poets take the same prompt in different ways. This had definitely a strong imagery throughout. I like that he brings us into the essence of the prompt, and brings it into how it relates to more modern times. Because he really speaks, especially from the very beginning, he notices the emptiness of the streets. Like, you could look at this prompt and you could see the idea of there's a striptease, there's a music hall, there's all these buildings where you could imagine people inside there, but he brings us into the emptiness of the street. I really like especially the clatter of life locked away in private homes or involuntary quarantine for the sake of yet another test of humanity's vile tolerance. Yes, the streets are clean, the birds still flying, the air is clearer than before, but our livelihoods surely value much more than that. You know, and I like how it speaks on, to me anyways, it speaks on the value of freedom. The end is really great too. What a price we paid to save whatever existence we could. We can't even look at a china plate without reliving the pain of the time we miss spending with those who matter so dear. And such sad and true spoken lines on the idea that, no matter what, and what fills these streets and these buildings in our lives, there's always going to be that memory of those times missed. So excellent writing, very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It's more than the freedom, because you look at a little bit beneath the lines. I walk these empty streets, stripping away the mental notes that clouded perspective. That hits on the idea of trust lost. That note of having so much bullshit pounded into you that it stripped away the clarity of thought, the clarity of perspective. The city was built and thrives upon emotional engagement and interaction, but now I hear it bleeding. Again, that passed the idea of that note of what was dished out. The bleeding is still going on. And it's more than just the advent of hypocrisy that was dished out easily. And the grandeur, yeah, that used to be us. Everybody's so living in such piss amounts of fear because of what was done. The idea of got it right here in this. Where was it? But our livelihoods surely value much more than that. Yes, there is a note to freedom there. There is that idea, yes, things still tick, even though we sat there and believed the value of what was dished out to the point of fear porn being the deluge. The promise, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, you have to do this, you have to do that, ignoring what we already knew to be the truth of what is and what isn't. We knew that masks didn't work. We knew that back in 1921, after the pandemic of the Spanish flu in 1918, 1917. We knew masks didn't work. We knew back then we probably caused an equal amount or more deaths by wearing the mask because of the propagation of the disease by wearing those masks. Yes, we're running that gamut once more. People are still dying. People are still wearing masks. There's a lot more fear still on the horizon because what is coming next? Oh, yes, we have to be ready for next. You know what? The funny part, you want the funny part about 19 or the vid, as they call it now? They actually ran 6 months before it came out. They ran a propagation theme of what would happen to the world if COVID-19 was released. 6 months later, we got those results and what would happen and what is still happening even today. So the idea of this matters most is what was lost. Communication, interaction, personal contact. And the fear still lingers. There's people still hide away. Still don't want contact. And people need contact. People need to interact. People need to engage each other face to face. Otherwise, you diminish the thought of humanity to begin with. Can't live that way. We don't function that way. We can't function that way.
That is so true. You're right about that, that we need that interaction, that face-to-face. I mean, that's why, you know, when there's when you read about children, babies who don't get physical touch, you know, it affects their physical health. You know, I mean, we need that. We need that you know, interaction. As you say, we are very social creatures. And I like that you brought up the effects of on trust, you know, when it comes to society and everything we've been through these last like 2 to 3 years. And so really, really a great comment there. All right. What do we have next?
Beautiful Beneath, Too Pretty by Poetic Creations. She had those sailboat eyes that settled on a broke-down clown, an anchor in a castle moat filled with many tears of sorrow. And on the shoreline irises, many irises cracking just the jokes, sensual cabaret at its best, or less strokes for all the folks. Madame and Mademoiselle, sadness still made to sell tickets, but longhorn men are bold, hardcore brimming are ever so wicked. A kind hand on her upper thigh, her eyes scream out, don't let me die, while whistling men climb high, unappeased by a beautiful blue sky. While the working girl sweats, rude men contemplate a dark caress, with a glimpse under her dress, yet no man has courted to impress. Lonely in this female quartet, that dreams of a loftier place to be, above fluffy white clouds and below blue skies that are too pretty. End poem.
Great read, Rex, and a wonderful write by PC. He didn't put a chosen prompt in his AN, but I'm guessing from all the different references that he was inspired by multiple prompts. I really liked those opening lines. She had those sailboat eyes that settled on a broke-down clown, an anchor in a castle moat filled with many tears of sorrow. That speaks to me on the idea of somebody who has that wanderlust, that desire to go out there in the world and then finds themselves held down by an unexpected turn in life. There's a real emotive quality to this. A kind hand on her upper thigh, her eyes scream out, don't let me die, while whistling men climb high, unappeased by a beautiful blue sky, while the working girl sweats, rude men contemplate a dark caress with a glimpse under her dress, yet no man has courted to impress. There's this real darkness to it, and I think it has this idea, this thought on sexual harassment, in the workplace, especially. It feels like it has a very Victorian era type feel to it, and the kind of the kind of life lived by the working girls of the Victorian era, and how it was like truly an ugly time. And it just strong imagery, great rhyme, and an excellent write on someone who should have been a free spirit, but instead was chained down to the life that they became a part of. So very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Let's see. Well, I got to leave the last two standards out for the moment, but it kind of hits. As someone who's working at a sensual cabaret, the burlesque strokes for all the folks, kind of hints at the idea of working in an arena that she's not really pleased with and doesn't really want to be in, but kind of had to the idea that she expected this to be something more than it was and is not happy with the angle to which it's played. And maybe that's her own fault for not actually investigating into the arena of what she was getting herself into, which does kind of hint again at that note of running into the big sea and all of a sudden finding yourself prostituted because your eyes were a little bit bigger than you were willing to stomach, and now you've been sold out. Now the back end, the two last stanzas, it's kind of a little... while the working girl sweats, made rude man contemplate dark dress with a glimpse under her dress, yet no man is called to impress. Now, see, that hits on the idea. Yeah, she was expecting more than she got, and she's not pleased with the situation. And that last stanza hits on that the idea of way too lofty expectations considering where she is in the moment. And that always leads to bad times.
I like that. Great thoughts shared on the idea of being starstruck. So, wonderful comment. All right, what do we got next?
I Too Was Once a Tulip by Kay Harvest.
I Too Was Once a Tulip. Firm, Parisian fan petals, velvety soft and worthy of touching. I too was once one of them, things with long, firm legs, a pop-up delight, free-falling in the windy night, only to regain my composure each morning, dewdrops refreshing me. I too was plucked by the stem, shoved in a basket with the others, my age for comparison, brought to market and sold on a whim, then put in a vase out of sunlight and forgotten. No one looks at you after your colors go dim. End poem. What a just absolutely stunning and thoughtful write. And your thoughts, Rex?
Ah, the perils of age and that which comes with it. Let's see what he got here. Velvety soft and worthy of touching. He hints with a note of wrinkles and saggy skin, long firm legs, a pop-up delight, free falling, regain my composure. The act of being youthful enough to, hey, I can party all night long. I'll be fresh like a daisy in the morning. And then that third stanza, plucked by the stem. It's the idea of, hey, once time has passed, you get relegated to the back burner like most things. And it also hits on the idea of not enjoying that motif.
Absolutely. Absolutely great comment. Yeah, this is a wonderful takeoff of the Chosen prompt, which is a kind of a haggard-looking elderly lady, looks sad and, you know, worn out in front of a basket of tulips. And I like how it touches on that, definitely that idea of, you know, once being young, once being energetic and youthful. And I definitely could relate to, you know, where it said, free falling in the windy night, only to regain my composure each morning, dewdrops refreshing me. You know, it's just amazing and crazy the difference between, you know, staying up late at night in your 20s and staying up late at night in your 40s and 50s and onward, and definitely not the same. That is for sure. But I like how there's this kind of sense of enviness, of wistfulness in this voice of this woman who knows that she was once the toast of the town. She was once desired and beautiful and, you know, had this energetic life. And then the idea of being plucked and used and abused and you know, put in the basket with everyone else. I feel like I, too, was plucked by the stem, moved in a basket with the others, my age for comparison, brought to market. Really touches to me on the idea of a loss of individuality. So amazing imagery and metaphors and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
We have Lonely Houses by Blue Lights 76. Hello, Kate. Nice to see you. Bricks and mortar, wooden nails, placed afar, they that sought some private space, music of their deeps, unheard and guarded, hermit life without pals, houses eyes could touch, neighboring hands met seldom. The dominoes, like dominoes together, they stay close today, flesh and blood in close quarters, where the mind, like those houses in the woods, stood afar in clouds floating in space, where the skin feels the touch, unfeeling and fleet, where minds meet over clouds that vanish, unprocessed words that appear and erase. Lonely and lost in this populated woods, many a spirit wandering in doubt, how unreachable and possessed behind those virtual windows. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I thought this was a wonderful take on the prompt. Strong imagery and metaphors. And the painting, for anyone who can't see it, there's actually two houses. There's a bigger house and there's a smaller house, and they're separated by a lake. And the trees from one house are leaning towards the yard of the other. And there's no people in the picture. So, you know, there really is a sense of separation and loneliness. You know, and I think where it says hermit life without pals, houses eyes could touch, neighboring hands met seldom, is that idea to me how we can live close to people and not really know them. Like we oftentimes live in a very lonely society where we don't really get to know other people. I really liked this all the way through, but the second stanza also really spoke to me. Like dominoes together, they stay close today, flesh and blood in close quarters, where the mind, like those houses in the woods, the far and clouds floating in space, where the skin feels the touch, unfeeling and fleet. I think this is another one that speaks on the need for human contact, but it also speaks to me on the idea of having a mind that works differently, that mind that floats off into the land of daydreams and has trouble connecting with reality. So beautiful and thoughtful, right, and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
That last sentence says it all. Lonely and lost in this populated woods, many a spirit wandering in doubts. How unreachable and possessed behind those virtual windows. The virtual windows being a computer. The fact that you can reach out and touch someone now without actually having to meet. The fact that, as he says, unprocessed words that appear and erase. The fact that you can sit there, drop the text in and delete it afterwards. Hey, I didn't quite like that one. And still, the idea there's no, the virtual windows works in two fields. The fact that you're running this type of life where there is no interaction, no real communication, no sense of seeing that which is opposed to viewing that which is. The idea of communicating on a level which is face-to-face once more, that idea of hiding behind the notion of this name or that name, this computer screen to that computer screen, and the value of interaction is lost because people see, feel, hear, note with the thought of how you view a face. That's how kids learn. That's how the interaction works. You don't get the value of that with no facial recognition, no viewpoint, because you can hear this, that, and the other thing across the screen, across a telephone line, but without seeing the actual face, how the eyes react, how the mouth moves, how the little crinkles that you've got around the mouth, nose, ears, eyes communicate the expression, then all you have is text and subtext, which actually mean nothing in the moment, except supposedly what it is supposed to mean.
Oh, I agree.
Too much time with no interaction, no real interaction.
Yeah, definitely. And as much as I appreciate, you know, my online friends and consider them real friends, you know, especially, you know, the my close-knit group on Late Night Poets, you can have meaningful interactions online. You know, there is also, as you were saying, that it's so important to interact with each other on a personal and you know, physical level, to where expressions can be seen and undertones can be understood. So, very cool comment. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Flowers Wilt by Weaver of Dreams. Hello, Kate.
It's good to see her on the board. We've got a nice board of people tonight with Kate and Hats and Errant Panther and Eric Svensson. Very cool. Very cool. All right. Flowers Wilt by Weaver of Dreams. You look upon me now and see a hag, a bag of bones, scrawny, somber, and sad. Yet only 10 years ago, my flowers and I were plump, dewy, fragrant, and pretty. What did this to me? Tis a tale as old as time, absinthe imbibed to excess, then a man who used and abused me, then passed me on, an object in abject misery, scorned, belittled, betrayed. Yes, sir, let this be a warning. Look to your children. Teach your son to be chivalrous, kind, and caring. Warn your daughter of charming men and their ways, or one day your son might destroy a young girl. Your daughter might be lost in a life like mine. End poem. And what a wonderful write by Kate. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, that opening stanza reminds me of the humor in Track Sheet Fairy Tales, that cartoon from way back when. And then the rest walks into that note of Aesop's Fables. You've got the story, you've got the notes, and all of a sudden you get the back end where the truth evolves. That thought, with it, teach your son to be chivalrous, kind, and caring, warn your daughter of charming men and their ways. Or one day, your son might destroy a young girl, your daughter might be lost in a life like mine. Yep, that fairy tale was fractured, and the fable came true. Well, they offer up the idea of there are some things you ought to pass on because things do happen in life. And, you know, I like that note, shit happens. And sometimes you get the rotten end of it, like in the old days back in Rome when everybody was sitting on the loo. When it came to that stick with the sponge on it, always got the shitty end.
Amen to that. Well said there, Rex. Yeah, I thought this was a great tale of warning. I like that she wrote this in the first-person narrative from the point of view of a woman who has gone through so much. Yet only 10 years ago, my flowers and I were plump, dewy, fragrant, and pretty. The idea of, you know, not only was it the man and, you know, the choices he made to abuse her and use her, but, you know, her own choice to imbibe an absence to excess, absence imbibed to excess, than a man who used and abused me, then passed me on, an abject misery, scorned, belittled, betrayed. Like I said, it's a wonderful tale of warning on the idea of having a self-destructive life, but also a tale of warning on being careful of who you choose for a life partner, for a romantic partner, and how an abusive relationship can truly affect you. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Let me see. We have The Museum of Lonely Muses by Ben Harvey. We can agree to hate Picasso, but the girl with the mandolin forever playing the stage of the Cubist prison has kept her in is the most beautiful descent into abstract insanity anyone ever dared depict. Art, they'll say, is about capturing something. So in a way of a museum day is a hunting trip for whatever the creative sought to imprison in giant and in paint, sorry, and what they may have felt defeated upon letting go, only strengthened the immortality of agony. They'll be wrong, of course, because they'll never quite understand that all these muses are also looking back, and what a spectacle it has been for them to see so much motion around their naked neighborhoods of marble and glass. But beauty has since slipped from beholder's eye into their screens and galleries. Pollard windows will never blossom again in the imagination of anyone opposing winter's doom, and so desperate redhead Jezebels have to survive on stolen glances, desperate dances with the forces of apathy, as the ticks and taps of texting drown out the debate about where are all the greats had gone. Well, sadly, they followed the audience out of the eye of the beautiful beholder, so they didn't have to capture anything and could just let go instead. End poem.
Great read, Rex, and a wonderful write by Ben Hart. Stunning imagery and metaphors a sad look at, I feel like it offers up the idea of what was once beautiful being destroyed. Such clever opening lines. We can agree to hate Picasso, but the girl with the mandolin forever playing the stage of the Cubist prison he kept her in is the most beautiful descent into abstract insanity anyone ever dared depict. A wonderful capture of the sadness of having yourself, self-reflection changed. I really like this all the way through, but I especially like art, they'll say, is about capturing something. So in a way, a museum day is a hunting trip for whatever the creator sought to imprison and paint, and what they may have felt defeated upon letting go only strengthened the immortality of agony. They'll be wrong, of course. I like how it speaks on the idea of how art forever captures an idea, and yet at the same time, it's an idea that's constantly changing because of the fact that every person who views that artwork will see something different in it. I also like, and so desperate red-haired Jezebels have to survive on stolen glances, desperate dances with the forces of apathy. There's this idea to me of the being changed from being admired in society to being barely noticed. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It hits on that note again. Desperate dances with the forces of apathy as the ticks and taps of texting drown out debate about where all the greats have gone. Again, that notation of not bothering to actually look at something for what it is, what it might conjure up in the imagination of one's mind, because each mind is different. So each thought, because he offers up that note of what they may have felt defeated upon letting go, only strengthen the immortality of agony. They'll be wrong, of course. The idea of art is something that's imaginative. It is something that it's expressive. But if you don't have the imagination or the expression to actually dig yourself into the piece itself and take a look at it for what it is, and offer up an opinion, an idea, a thought, then, and instead just discount it, then you've kind of got a generation of people who think the idea of rolling their bungholes on TikTok or whatever medium for sale is the art of today, when actually it's just another pouring out on a different level, which shows no art, which shows no sense of self, except, hey, pay me. For what? The same thing everybody else has? Because you know what? Everyone has an asshole. And you know what? Just like an opinion, they all smell the bloody sin. No one wants to see more of it as a picturesque view. Hey, pay me for this. No thanks. Have fun. The idea,
right.
It demoralizing the idea of where you can find and impart the idea of beauty.
I like that. Very cool thoughts shared. Thank you. All right. What do we have next?
I have to go find it. Oh, my owls are here. Let me see. What have we got? What have we got? Where are we? Okay. Libertine by Esky.
All right.
That one's good.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Streetlight polkas tipping in ebony sheen. Yesterday's jade eyes squinted in the dance. Corona snapshots of faded libertines, feet firmly planted in pugilistic stance. Cursing at shadows under a gibbous moon, nighttime fingers clawing at thin ice, crumbling parchment faces aged too soon, yellow teeth ground on absinthe-stained spice, spit-polished shoes cramping the shaman's feet, a nimble dress and trains for Babylon's whore, sharing a toast where the old ghosts meet, pimping their muse for a few pennies more, custodians to a world of private fears, paid in notoriety, sweat, and pig ears, and poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Oh, I like that last line, paid in notoriety, sweat, and pig ears. Kind of, what's that notation? A silk purse out of a sow's ear. But there's the idea of age rolls in this, because you hit on that sort of spit polished shoes, cramping the shaman's feet, and then we're dressing chains for Babylon's whore, sharing a toast with an old ghost meat, pimping their muse for a few pennies more. This kind of hits the libertine. You look at that angle as something in the freedom given, the pandering, because you've got the streetlight polka tripping on ebony sheen. I like nice opening line there. Yesterday's jade eyes squinted in the dance. Again, that note, passing through time and the age of one who's peddled herself and still peddling, even down to the last moment, offering up that silk purse out of a sow's ear, so to speak, the thought of age and still looking for those little notes of brass coins to fill the purse.
Oh, absolutely. And I, too, really got a kick out of those end lines. I have to admit, I didn't think of the saying, silk purse out of sow's ears, but it makes sense. Now, what came to my mind was, like, the arena of football, or because of the old footballs that used to be made out of pigskin. Obviously not so much anymore. Custodian to a world of private fears. Oh, my goodness, I'm so sorry. I'm yawning because I'm tired, and not because that reading that line bores me to tiredness, because it is definitely an amazing poem. But, yeah, it made me think of the arena of sports and the arena of football, and how we always need something or someone to worship, to cheer on. Another wonderful poem that uses the word libertine, the freedom, and I like how this is that search for freedom and that desire for freedom, but at a cost that is way too heavy. Wonderful word choices, spit polished shoes cramping the shaman's feet, a nimble dress and trains for Babylon's whore, sharing a toast where the old ghosts meet, pimping their muse for a few pennies more. And yeah, you've got your freedom, but at what cost? And I really like this spit polished shoes cramping the shaman's feet, because to me that speaks on the idea of trying to fit yourself into a role that you're not meant to be, or even the idea of how trying to fit into society and fit into the workday and the life that everybody expects you to live, trying to just shove yourself into that can really, just damage your spirit, damage the idea of who you're really supposed to be. So excellent write and very well done. And I I don't know if we have any left. I assume like one or two, but I'm not going to try to have us, you know. Oh, well, wait, we do have one on the board. It is Babbler, so we might as well go ahead and get that done, because even if we go a minute or two over, that is all right. So with that being said,
Dry by Babylon. The teapot is empty, has been for some time. Green or black or gray, nothing sleeps to give it away. The ashtray is ashless. A goblet has been toppled, left on its side. Wine bottle unstopped, last dregs dried. When was the last party? People really smiled. It's been a long while. Talking for hours, navy sky blushing pink, planting crow's feet over the kitchen sink, champagne flutes, singing a cacophony of clinks. 2 years through a stream, and I'm so tired. Distance disease lingers, painting sepia, gatherings transpired. I don't have it in me to call them all back. The memories are hanging, dry as a bone, still on the track. Still on the rack, damn. End poem.
Great read, Rex. And what a wonderful write by Babbler. I really like her flow of imagery that hits hard. I really like Wine Bottle Unstoppled, Last Dregs Dried. When was the last party people really smiled? It's been a long while, talking for hours, navy sky blushing pink, planting crow's feet. Wonderful lines on the idea of the dregs, living in the dregs of life, and that silence felt, that loneliness felt, and the idea, the questioning of, you know, really getting together and getting together in a way that it's not necessarily because we have to, but because we want to. And 2 years through a screen, and I'm so tired, distance disease lingers, painting sepia. You know, it really is another one that seems to speak on the idea of the after effect of the pandemic and the feeling so tired. I think this is a poem that definitely fits well with tonight's conversation. I like her use of alliteration in cacophony of clinks and the imagery in the lines of I have gathering transpired, I have, don't have it in me to pull them all back. The memories are hanging. You know, those memories that you want to hold on to and yet at the same time you want to let go, because there's a certain, like, emptiness to them. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Emptiness and hollowness, and so is a forced suicide of thought, being stripped of any semblance of self or assembly of gathered friends. The idea is, hey, y'all don't need each other. You can do it from the phone. You can do it from home. You can do this and that. It's all a load of bullshit. People don't survive that way. They can't survive that way. And like all other animals, we're pack-oriented, need the connections.
I like that. I like that. And so very, very true. Great show tonight, Rex. Thank you, as always, for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you to Hat, Errant Panther, Eric Svensson, Weaver of Dreams, and Jenny, all for hanging on the board. I really appreciate you all. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. You're truly appreciated. And, of course, you know, make sure to check out all the poetry contests and topic boards put up by Late Night Poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night, gang.